page 211. The Council of the Dwarf, pages 211 through 222. Page 212 is blank. Page 213. We returned as we had come, but rode with greater speed, for the horses now were eager, and eventually came down from the hills and saw the flat plain, and in the distance at the ocean's edge the settlement and the great hall of Hrothgar. Now Bullywiff veered away and led us in another direction toward high rocky crags swept by the ocean winds. I rode alongside Hergr and inquired the reason for this, and he said we were to seek out the dwarfs of the region. At this I was much surprised, for the men of the north have no dwarves among their society. They are never seen in the streets, nor do any sit at the feet of kings, nor are any to be found counting money or keeping records, or any of the things that we know of dwarves. Footnote 1. In the Mediterranean, from Egyptian times, dwarves were thought especially intelligent and trustworthy, and tasks of bookkeeping and money handling were reserved to them. Return to text. Page 214. Never had any Northman mentioned dwarves to me, and I had presumed that so giant a people, footnote 2, would never produce dwarves. Now we came to a region of caves, hollowed and windswept, and Bullywiff dismounted from his horse, and all the warriors of Bullywiff did likewise, and proceeded by foot. I heard a hissing sound, and verily I saw puffs of steam issue from one and another of these several caves. We entered one cave, and there found dwarves. They were in appearance thus: of the ordinary size of dwarf, but distinguished by hands of great size, and bearing features that appeared exceedingly aged. There were both male and female dwarfs, and all had the appearance of great age. The males were bearded and solemn, the women also had some hair upon the face, so they appeared manlike. Each dwarf wore a garment of fur or sable. Each also wore a thin belt of hide decorated with bits of hammered gold. The dwarves greeted our arrival politely, with no sign of fear. Hergr said these creatures have magic powers and need fear no man on earth. However, they are apprehensive of horses, and for this reason we had left the mounts behind us. Footnote 2 on page 214. Of approximately 90 skeletons that can be confidently ascribed to the Viking period in Scandinavia, the average height appears to be about 170 centimeters, 5 foot 7 inches. Return to text. Page 215. Hergr said also that the powers of a dwarf reside in his thin belt, and that a dwarf will do anything to retrieve his belt if it is lost. Hergr said this also, that the appearance of great age among the dwarves was a true thing, and that a dwarf lived beyond the span of any ordinary man. Also he said to me that these dwarves are virile from their earliest youth, that even as infants they have hair at the groin, and members of uncommon size. Indeed, it is in this way that the parents first come to know that their infant child is a dwarf and a creature of magic, who must be taken to the hills to live with others of his kind. This done, the parents give thanks to the gods and sacrifice some animal or other, for to give birth to a dwarf is accounted high good fortune. This is the belief of the North people, as Hergr spoke it, and I do not know the truth of the matter and report only what was told to me. Now I saw that the hissing and steam issued from great cauldrons into which hammered steel blades were plunged to temper the metal, for the dwarves make weapons that are highly prized by the Northmen. Indeed, I saw the warriors of Bullywiff looking about the caves eagerly as any woman in a bazaar shop selling precious silks. Page 216. Bullywiff made inquiries of these creatures, and was directed to the topmost of the caves, wherein sat a single dwarf, older than all the others, with a beard and hair of purest white, and a creased and wrinkled face. This dwarf was called Tengal, which means a judge of good and evil, and also a soothsayer. This Tengal must have had the magical powers that all said he did, for he immediately greeted Bullywiff by his name, and bade him sit with him. Bullywiff sat, and we gathered a short distance away, standing. Now Bullywiff did not present the Tengal with gifts. The Northmen make no obeisance to the little people. They believe that the favors of the dwarves must be freely given, and it is wrong to encourage the favors of a dwarf with gifts. Thus Bullywiff sat, and the Tengal looked at him, and then closed his eyes and began to speak, rocking back and forth as he sat. The Tengal spoke in a high voice as a child, and Hergur told me the meaning was thus. O Bullywiff, you are a great warrior, but you have met your match in the monsters of the mist, the eaters of the dead. Page 217. This shall be a struggle to the death, and you shall need all your strength and wisdom to overcome the challenge. And he went on in this manner for some good time, rocking back and forth. The import was that Bullywiff faced a difficult adversary, which I already knew well enough, and so did Bullywiff himself. Yet Bullywiff was patient. Also, I saw that Bullywiff took no offense when the dwarf laughed at him, which frequently he did. The dwarf spoke, "You have come to me because you attacked the monsters in the brackish marsh and tarn, and this availed you nothing. Therefore you come to me for advice and admonishment as a child to his father, saying, 'What shall I do now, for all my plans have failed me?'" The Tengal laughed long at this speech, then his old face turned solemn. "O Bullywiff," he said, "I see the future, but I can tell you no more than you already know. You and all your brave warriors gathered your skill and your courage to make an attack upon the monsters in the desert of dread. In this you cheated yourself, for such was not a true hero's enterprise." I heard these words with astonishment, for it had seemed heroic work enough for me. Page 218. "No, no, noble Bullywiff," the Tengal said. "You set out upon a false mission, and deep in your hero's heart you knew it was unworthy. So, too, was your battle against the glowworm dragon Korgon unworthy, and it cost you many fine warriors. To what end are all your plans?" Still, Bullywiff did not answer. He sat with the dwarf and waited. "A hero's great challenge," the dwarf said, "is in the heart and not in the adversary. What matter if you had come upon the Wendal in their lair and had killed many of their number as they slept? You could kill many, yet this would not end the struggle any more than cutting off the fingers will kill the man. To kill the man, you must pierce the head or the heart, and thus it is with the Wendal. And all this you know, and need not my counsel to know it." Thus the dwarf, rocking back and forth, chastised Bullywiff, and thus Bullywiff accepted his rebuke, for he did not reply, but only lowered his head. "You have done the work of a mere man," the Tengal continued, "and not a proper hero. A hero does what no man dares to undertake. To kill the Wendal, you must strike at the head and the heart. You must overcome their very mother in the thunder caves." Page 219. I did not understand the meaning of these words. "You know of this, for it has always been true through all the ages of man. Shall your brave warriors die one by one, or shall you strike at the mother in the caves? Here is no prophecy, only the choice of a man or a hero." Now Bullywiff made some response, but it was low and lost to me in the howl of the wind that raked the entrance to the cave. Whatever the words, the dwarf spoke further. "That is the hero's answer, Bullywiff, and I would expect none other from you. Thus shall I help your quest." Then a number of his kind came forward into the light from the dark recesses of the cave, and they bore many objects. "Here," said the Tengal, "are lengths of rope made from the skins of seals caught at the first melting of the ice. These ropes will help you to attain the ocean entrance to the thunder caves." "I thank you," Bullywiff said. "And here also," the Tengal said, "are 7 daggers, forged with steam and magic for you and your warriors. Great swords will be of no avail in the thunder caves. Carry these new weapons bravely, and you shall accomplish all you desire." Page 220. Bullywiff took the daggers and thanked the dwarf. He stood. "When shall we do this thing?" he asked. "Yesterday is better than today," the Tengal replied, "and tomorrow is better than the day which follows that. So make haste and carry out your intentions with a firm heart and a strong arm." "And what follows if we succeed?" Bullywiff asked. Then the Wendall shall be mortally wounded and thrash in its death throes a final time, and after this last agony the land shall have peace and sunlight forevermore. And your name shall be sung glorious in all the halls of the Northlands forevermore. The deeds of dead men are so sung, Bullywiff said. That is true, the dwarf said, and laughed again, the giggle of a child or a young girl, and also the deeds of heroes who live, but never are sung the deeds of ordinary men. All this you know. Now Bullywiff departed from the cave and gave to each of us the dagger of the dwarves, and we descended from the rocky windswept crags and returned to the kingdom and the great hall of Hrothgar as night was falling. Page 221. All these things took place, and I saw them with my own eyes. Page 222 is blank.